I'm going to read this morning from Luke's Gospel, chapter 24.
You can find this reading on page 810 of the Church Bible, and it's chapter 24, verses 13 to 25. That same day, two of Jesus' followers were walking to the village of Emmaus, 7 miles out of Jerusalem. And as they walked along, they were talking about everything that had happened. Suddenly, Jesus himself came along and joined them and began walking beside them. But they didn't know who he was because God kept them from recognizing him. "You seem to be in a deep discussion about something," he said. "What are you so concerned about?" They stopped short, sadness written across their faces. Then one of them, Cleopas, replied, "You must be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the things that have happened here the last few days." "What things?" Jesus asked. "The things that happened to Jesus, the man from Nazareth," they said. "He was a prophet who did wonderful miracles. He was a mighty teacher, highly regarded by both God and all the people. But our leading priests and other religious leaders arrested him and handed him over to be condemned to death, and they crucified him. We had thought he was the Messiah who had come to rescue Israel. That all happened 3 days ago. Then some women came from our group of his followers, were at the tomb early this morning, and they came back with an amazing report. They said his body was missing, and they had seen angels who told them Jesus is alive. Some of our men ran out to see, and sure enough, Jesus' body was gone, just as the women had said. And then Jesus said to them, 'You are such foolish people. You find it hard to believe all that the prophets wrote in the scriptures.'" Amen.
Thank you. Earlier on in the service, we were looking at pictures that were taken from strange angles. And when a picture is taken from a strange angle, it can be hard to work out what it was. Some of them were very easy. Some of them were more difficult. One of them, nobody worked out what it was. Obviously, we haven't studied the fire extinguishers in the church in great detail recently. And we finished with a picture of the cross that was taken from above, looking at the cross differently from how we normally look at it. And reasonably quickly, most of us were on to the fact that it was the cross. In our Bible reading today, we have some people who seriously had been looking at the cross of Jesus from the wrong angle. And because they had done that, even though there is this incredible rumor that Jesus is alive, that Jesus has risen from the dead, they've got a report from some women who've said to them, "You know, not only is the body gone, but we've actually met him. We've spoken to him." But because of the way they had been looking at Jesus, they weren't able to grasp what was being said to them. So Jesus has to come alongside them, and he has to explain to them what it is that they need to see. Now, this story that we're looking at this morning is also a story that we can look at from two different angles, and I want to do a bit of both in the sermon today. One way of looking at it is to ask the question, well, how do we see Jesus? Jesus appears in this story, and they were blind to the fact that he was alongside them. They needed their eyes to be opened. And sometimes it's like that for us. We feel that Jesus isn't there alongside us, when the truth is that he is there alongside us. The other angle to look at this story is to say that we are followers of Jesus, and because we are followers of Jesus, we are called to be like him. Jesus says that as the Father sent him, so he sends us. So two different ways of approaching this story, and both of them are really important. If we look at it from the point of view of seeking to follow Jesus and from the point of trying to find Jesus, both of them teach us that the Christian life may not be quite what we expected it to be. The Christian life is not a life of being wonderfully happy all the time. The Christian life is not a life where every prayer gets answered as we want it to be answered. And the Christian life is also not a life where we go around serving other people all the time and doing things. Sometimes Christian believers can feel a pressure that we ought to be happy, that we ought to be content with the world, that we ought to have perfect faith in God all the time. And when we get challenged, we not only feel the challenge itself, but we can feel guilty about the fact that we feel challenged. And that's why it's so important to look at the cross the right way. It's so important for us to see that Jesus comes to us, quoting the prophet Isaiah, as the man of sorrows. He comes to us as the one acquainted with grief. We never should think that because we are Christians that we're going to be happy all the time. In fact, if we follow him, it's pretty much guaranteed that we will be led into places that will make life far more difficult for us than if we hadn't set out to follow him in the first place. In that story, when eventually they realize that it is Jesus, it comes at the moment that Jesus takes bread and he breaks it. Doing again what he did at the Last Supper just a few days before. Jesus takes bread and he breaks it. And he says, "This is my body given for you." Where do we see Jesus? Jesus gives us a way to remember him that has been saying across the centuries that the way to remember Jesus is in something that's broken. Don't look for Jesus in the perfectly fixed. And as we hear these incredible stories of Jesus being raised from the dead, there are other stories in which they recognize Jesus because you can still see the wounds in his hands and in his feet and in his sides. Jesus is the eternal wound carrier. So let's try and take any pressure off us this morning when we come to church that we ought to feel good. Now, if you feel good, that's fantastic. Don't turn this into a sermon that says you ought to feel bad. Jesus is described in the scriptures as the one full of joy by the Holy Spirit. No, this passage gives us the permission to say, I am wounded, I've been hurt, and part of following Christ is about living with the wounds and with the hurts that I have gone through. He's not standing on the side saying, come on, you ought to do better, be happy, clap your hands, shout for joy. He says, I've been there, I know it. I've been tempted, I've been tested in every way that you have been tested. And when Jesus in Matthew chapter 25 talks about how we recognize him, he says, you find me in those who are hungry. You find me in those who are thirsty. You find me in those who have nowhere to stay. And he talks about his own rejection and he says, I am the rejected one. I am the hurt one. And if we're going to follow him, then that's the sort of place where we are very likely to go. And here is Cleopas and his friends, and they're looking at Jesus, and they just cannot handle the idea of a rejected Messiah. They thought the Messiah was going to be somebody great, was going to be somebody victorious. And then Jesus came, and Jesus showed them a completely new sign of greatness. You know, we sang that song a few moments ago. Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. I want to see you. I almost wanted to write another verse to that song today. I haven't set it to music. But it was, Lord, open the eyes of my heart, because, Lord, I want to see you how you really are today. You know how that works in the book of Revelation? The Lion of Judah has conquered. And John looks up and he expects to see a roaring lion. And what he actually sees is a lamb that looks as if it has been slaughtered. And for the rest of the book of Revelation, Jesus is the lamb. Jesus is the battered one. Jesus is the broken one. And he comes alongside them and says, don't you realize that's how it has to be? And he comes alongside them and he listens to them. Those of us who've been doing the lifting the lid Bible studies will know that this is a major thing in those studies where, when this passage is looked at. Here is Jesus. He is raised from the dead. A new, incredible era has begun because Jesus has done that. And he finds these two people who are walking away from the action. And he stands alongside them. And I'm pretty sure that the conversation was much longer than the one described here. I think it went along for quite a long time. And he says to them, what are you talking about? And when they give him a short reply, he says, explain it to me. Talk about what's going on. And he listens. That's Jesus. Jesus has, yes, he's been through his own pain, he's been through his own suffering, but he cares for these two people. And if we've to be like him, then we care about other people's suffering. If we're like him, we take time to listen. We take time to say, you know, how are you? How are you doing? And if they want to speak, we let them speak. Sometimes people don't want, and we allow them. We don't drag stories out of them that they don't want to tell us. And eventually, Jesus points them to the scriptures. And they later say that as Jesus talks through the scriptures with them, that their hearts were burning. And I believe that's true for us here today. Jesus comes to us and he listens to us. He wants us to pray to him. This earlier on in the service, we took just a few moments to say, well, you know, whatever prayers you've got to pray to the Lord, pray them today. He wants to hear. He wants to listen. But he also wants to come alongside us and to say, people, this book matters. He has to say to Cleopas and to Cleopas's friend, look, if you'd got what this book was saying, you wouldn't be in the state you're in now. You would have realized that this was what the Messiah is going to do. You would have realized that across the centuries, the people that God has chosen have always been suffering. That it's always looked as if they were on the brink of failure. And then Jesus makes as if he's going to go on. I think this is one of the most fascinating details in this story. Jesus gives them the opportunity to walk away from him. He's risen from the dead. He's got this incredible announcement to make. Look, guys, I'm alive. It's not like you think it is, but Jesus treats people with dignity. And Jesus is prepared to let people walk away from him. But they say to him, come on in. It's getting late. You need a meal. You need some accommodation for the night. Jesus, risen from the dead, wants their hospitality. He wants their welcome. One of the myths of being Christian is you think, I've got to be the person who's giving all the time. I've got to be the person who's doing things for other people all the time. But that's not how Jesus operated. Jesus went to places where he was welcome. Jesus, do you want to come to my house for a meal? Sure, I'll come to your house for a meal. Zacchaeus, we looked at this a couple of weeks ago. Zacchaeus, up that tree. Zacchaeus, I haven't come to give stuff to you. I've come for you to give something to me. And in doing that, we see one of the key things about Christian mission that so often the church has forgotten. That Christian mission is about getting alongside people. It's about living in their world. It's about accepting what they offer. It's not about huddling away in a church building. And Jesus comes to them. And yes, their hearts are burning because of what they see, but they also see a stranger who is in need of some help, and they offer it to him. I think it is fantastic that Jesus is like that. I think it's great that Jesus says to us today, I want your help. There's things I need doing in the world, and I want you to do them. Jesus doesn't need us. He's all powerful, but he loves us. And he wants us to know him. Jesus gently meets them where they are. He takes the time to explain the scriptures to them. He helps them to see things from a different view, from a different angle. And the question in the Lifting the Lid Bible study was, when we interact with people, do we take the time to walk alongside them? For I'd want to say more than that. I'd want to say, do we take the time to become part of their lives? Do we take the time to live within their world? Sometimes an unsafe one. And do we get to the point where we build such relationships with people that we truly can lead them to the scriptures and introduce them to Jesus? Jesus, the one who was called the friend of tax collectors and sinners. Jesus, the one who was accused of having a demon. Jesus, the one of whom his own family said he was insane. Jesus, the one that people said he was a blasphemer. Jesus, the one battered, bruised, broken, hanging on that cross, who invites us to meet with him in his brokenness. And the Jesus who loves to go into people's house when they invite him in for a meal. And their eyes are open and they see and they understand. I'd like to show you sort of at the end of this morning a video clip. This is one of the video clips from the Lifting the Lid course. Can I just explain sort of why I want to show it? I think because we have to learn, one, that our own sense of woundedness is important in us coming to Christ, but also Jesus' own sense of woundedness. And one of the things that we were encouraged to think about, specifically to do with mental illness, was around this idea of stigma, this idea of not being accepted for who you are. And what I want to say is, Jesus knows exactly who we are. And Jesus knows exactly what it's like to be on the receiving end of stigma. Let's have a look at this.
I was first diagnosed when I was 16, so it was just after my 16th birthday. I was diagnosed with depression. At the time, it was quite severe.
I was diagnosed with anxiety and depression when I was about 17, 18, going through my last year of school.
I was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder when I was 15.
I went to a doctor, and a month later, they diagnosed me with depression and put me on some antidepressants.
I developed depression when I was about 15.
I have suffered from depression, anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder.
I think the main kind of stigma is, well, what's wrong with you? You've got the perfect life. Why wouldn't you be happy? And just mainly people thinking it's a choice to be depressed. Nobody in the world would choose to feel depressed and isolated and completely horrible about themselves. So for someone to say or suggest that it's your fault, it's pretty horrible, because then you kind of start blaming yourself and then it just escalates.
Shortly after I was diagnosed, I experienced a bit of discrimination at school. One of the teachers just didn't quite understand. I really do feel like she viewed me as kind of weak or like making it up, or she just didn't take it as seriously. That was really difficult for me, because especially in a school environment, and they say it kind of in front of the whole class, it does impact you.
You kind of experience a lot of stigma and discrimination, not necessarily personally, but just out kind of in the community and out when people are talking, and just kind of wry comments people make, like kind of schizo or lunatic, etc. Although they're not meant to harm anyone particularly, they can really affect someone who's trying to cope with their own little crisis, and it does make a massive impact to them if they look round and see people kind of treating them in this way.
When I was writing my CV, and I'd written obviously that I had been in a period in a mental hospital and stuff like that, so that was on my CV, and I was told that that was stupid, you know, people wouldn't take me on because of that. And I actually got a job when I'd first written my CV, but they'd picked up on that and they sort of took me inside and said, will you show up?
I first experienced stigma when I was 12 years old, when I was first referred to the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, and my counsellor put it down to teenage angst and hormones, and it completely put me off with trying to seek help for quite a long time.
When people were stigmatising me, I felt quite sad, and I also panicked me more, so it made my OCD worse, because I realised that people were picking up on the things that I was doing, people commenting about them, and also people were avoiding me because I was doing these things.
It's interesting that Prince Harry, in his speech at the Invictus Games yesterday, was talking about mental health as being the key thing in recovery. If anything from this morning is spoken to you after the service, and the area over there behind the PA desk is a prayer zone, it's a quiet area, there will be people there. They'd love to meet with you, talk with you, if you'd like them to pray with you. And let's be real before God. Let's be real before the one who has been tempted and tested in every way as we are, and who comes alongside these people, and he listens, and he leads them to himself, to the point that their eyes are open and they see. They'd seen Jesus before, but in the end they saw him from a completely different angle.